Hello, this is John Cleese, and you're listening to the Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Podcast Network. Find more great podcasts at www.thepodcastnetwork.com. Listen, learn, evolve.
G'day world, this is Cameron Riley. I'm sitting down at Monash University in Melbourne with a gentleman who I read was described by, somebody once said of this gentleman that if there was a Nobel Prize for philosophy, this gentleman would have won it probably at least twice. Is Mr. Jack Smart. Now he tells me that his official title now is the Emeritus Professor, let me see if I can get this right, the Emeritus Professor of Philosophy at the Research School for Social Sciences at Australian National University. Is that right, Jack?
Of Social Sciences. And to be an emeritus professor, unless you've committed a murder or something, just means you're a retired professor.
Right.
Emeritus means out to grass.
Somebody they can't get rid of.
Well, they don't have to call you emeritus. I mean, it just means you're retired.
But it's an honorary title.
Yeah.
I had Professor Noam Chomsky on the show a while ago. I believe he's the emeritus professor at linguistics at MIT.
Yeah, he would be.
Very respectable.
He's retired by now.
Now, Jack, you, I guess you've had a very long career. You're 86, is that right now? And you've just shouted me out to a very nice lunch. We chatted with some professors of mathematics, astronomy, physics. It was a terrific lunch. Now, we've got a bunch of things that I want to cover off in the time that we have today about philosophy. And first of all, let me ask you this question. What do you see is the role of a philosopher in 2007?
Oh, much what it would be in at any time, except that the word philosophy has changed its meaning a bit, because scientists used to be called natural philosophers, and of course Oxford and Scottish universities, the professor of applied mathematics is often called professor of natural philosophy, but the word philosophy, the word scientist came in, I suppose, sometime in the 19th century, and Lord Kelvin, he hated to be called a scientist. He loved the word natural philosopher, but nowadays, of course, the word philosopher tends to be people who do the sort of things that are done in philosophy departments and universities.
Do you think that philosophy has a role in everyday life? How do you impact on the way that we live, the way that we think?
Well, I try not to, really. I like my philosophy to be abstract and the interest in the cosmos. And, of course, I was attracted to write a sort of a book stating utilitarianism, and that's a cosmic thing, really, that as the great moral philosopher Sidgwick in the 19th century said, seeing the world from the point of view of the universe, and utilitarianism is roughly when you deliberate, of course, normally you just have to go by certain sensible rules, but if you deliberate, you should do it by deliberating what is the action which would maximize expected utility, not as the economists say in terms of pounds, shillings and pence and so on, but in terms of happiness, or in Peter Singer's case, maximization of desire, and they come to almost the same thing. And so I think that a utilitarian, if he was a good saintly one, would be, if we met denizens from some distant star, we would be concerned for their happiness equally with our own happiness, just as people should have been concerned with the happiness of Negro slaves equally with the happiness of the white people.
And the happiness of homosexual couples, the happiness of...
Yes, the homosexual couples, we rather them to be happy. We might be against homosexuality even, but think that, well, it's better they should be happy, but discourage other people from us. I don't know that I would agree with that, but they'd still be concerned with the total happiness that these people would think that not legalizing homosexuality, say, increased the general happiness because, for some reasons, homosexuals... I don't do practical ethics, really, but don't worry about these things, but... if someone was opposing, a utilitarian could oppose homosexuality, but only because he thought that legalizing homosexuality had bad consequences, mm-hmm. whereas other people like me would think it would not lead to bad consequences.
I want to get back to utilitarianism, if we can. You are probably best known for your work in the area of mind-brain dualism with some of your colleagues, UT Place, etc., in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
Now, I believe at the time that was quite a... to put that in perspective for the audience, at the time you and your colleagues said, well, the brain and the mind are the same thing. The mind is a function of the brain. And this was a fairly radical statement in the 50s, correct?
Well, roughly, it was more the mind is the brain. When I arrived in Adelaide, I was very much imbued with the sort of philosophy that Gilbert Ryle, who was a great man in Oxford, and he thought the mind was the topic of hypothetical propositions about behaviour. But... he got into trouble over things like toothaches and so on. is a toothache just a propensity to wince, for example, and or groan? What UT Place, who came to my department, actually officially as a lecturer in psychology, but he was it was one of the bad old days when psychology was still in philosophy department. I soon rectified that, of course, and eventually the psychology department became huge. But he was, I think, better as a philosopher than a psychologist. I think he was quite a good academic psychologist, but his paper, Is Consciousness a Brain Process, said by... Bill Lycan in America, a very good philosopher of mine, that was probably the best paper on the philosophy of mind in the last part of the 20th century. And anyway, Place had a very original mind, and I tried to defend Ryle's behaviorist view, but also it had a three-corner discussion with Charlie Martin, who was in my department too, I eventually came round thinking that he was quite right, that sensations just are brain processes. Not that we need know that. The Italian peasants say it doesn't maybe know that sensations are brain processes, but we worked out a view that sensation reports are what I called topic neutral. It was borrowing a term from Ryle, who used it for logical terms, and ones like because, which if they were the only things you heard, would not tell you what the discourse was about. Could be theology, physics, history, anything. And I use the word topic neutral in a more restricted sense to mean neutral between dualism, brain-mind dualism, and the materialist theory, the mind roughly just is the brain. I mean, there are quibbles. You wouldn't say that his mind weighed 5 kilograms, but you might say, that the brain processes, such as having sensations, were. So I had to deal with the. Which Place partly did, but I needed a I wanted to be a physicalist through and through, and I needed a view of colours, which was. It ended up by being the colour red, say, is a hellishly complicated and disjunctive state. Imagine the state of being either a bishop or a cricketer or a prime number or a tree, say. It's a rather uninteresting state, being so disjunctive, but if there were a mental disease in which if a chap was presented with either, what was it, a bishop or a
cricketer?
A cricketer or a prime number
or a tree,
he would stand on his head. Then a psychiatrist might want a word for that, say a snark, and the snarkhood would be a very disjunctive and idiosyncratic state. I had that sort of view of the physical state that a colour is, and it maybe not quite as disjunctive as I thought. There's a very good book by a young chap called. Well, he was young when I met him years ago. David Hilbert, he had the same name as a great mathematician, but he put an initial in, I think it was R, to distinguish it, and people laughed to have it be called David Hilbert. And he wrote an excellent book on colours, which identified the colours of reflected objects. He'd have to say something else about. Radiated light and light of the sun at sunset and so on reflectances, and these are reflectances, something can be defined in physics. I had this to deal with, because if you have a yellow image, it looks as though yellowness is a quality of experience, something spooky in my opinion, and this will try to give an account of colours as a physical object. You could define normal human percipient by seeing how many bits of wool are dipped in different chemicals they could sort out, and then say yellow would be the colour or similar to the bit of wool, which would be hard to pick out from a Australian one-day cricket cap, but not from a Australian baggy green cap, and so on. You know, they could sort of give an account of colours in terms of normal human percipient, and also you'd have to rule out dusk, where you can't pick them out. So that if you could still pick it out at dusk, then it would maybe due to the texture or some other property of the surface, not colour. So give a physicalist account of colour, and David Armstrong was good on this sort of stuff. So we went a bit further than place. In fact, Armstrong persuaded me that states of mind, such as beliefs and desires, were brain states, whereas Place still wanted to be Rylean about these, but not about experiences. And
so what did people think mind was, if it wasn't a brain state, if it wasn't the brain? What did they think it was?
That's difficult to know. It depended on the particular philosopher. Descartes, of course, thought it was an immaterial soul. What people such as Peter Strawson thought it was is more unclear, and he was a very influential philosopher. But they did think that I think there was a bit of confusion about identity, if evening star and morning star, if these words have different meanings. Morning star, what's seen in the morning, and the evening star at other times, what's seen in the evening. The morning star is identical with the evening star, and that's something you found out empirically. It's not a logical truth. And I think there was a bit of trouble in a lot of people appreciating that two things could be identical. We don't want to say that a pain, the word pain means the same as a brain state. We might say the pain is whatever it is that causes me to cry or something like that. And of course Descartes would say it was the something in the immaterial soul, the philosopher Hobbes might have said it was a process in the brain, and you could talk about your pains and itches and things to Descartes perfectly well, because we both say that these things are what cause